Welcome back to the Restoring Darkness podcast. On today's show, Mark and I are pleased to be joined by Odette Wilkins. She has been a technology transactional attorney for over 20 years, having represented multinational corporations in entertainment, finance, and technology. She co-founded Wired Broadband Inc., WBI, a nonprofit in New York City, and the National Call for Safe Technology, coalition of over 100 organizations and individuals nationwide. Both organizations advocate protections for the public by promoting safer telecommunications. Expanding her efforts in NYC, she founded the NYC Alliance for Safe Technology, a coalition of New York City residents, civic leaders, and community board leaders and members advocating for the responsible placement of wireless facilities. In her various roles, she has been promoting the benefits of wired broadband connectivity to bridge the digital divide for the unserved, underserved, and disabled communities. Her social media will be and websites will be on the RestoringDarkness.com website. But before we get to our interview with Odette, I want to tell you a little bit about the Lighting and Darkness Foundation, which I am the interim executive director, just interim, because it's non-paying. So that means nobody else will do it except me. But if you want to donate to the work we're doing, which is we're going to educate the lighting industry. That's right, the industry that will fix the problem, because only the lighting industry can fix light pollution problems, right? Right now, they have their heads in the sand, and the Lighting and Darkness Foundation is made up of over 70 lighting companies that started it. And so we're going to create education. We're going to create awareness, like the Restoring Darkness podcast that we put out there on a bi-monthly basis or so. And if you want to support that work, including our work in mitigating light trespass disputes, that's right. Lighting and Darkness Foundation has two cases right now where we're helping mitigate between light trespass between neighbors. You can go to RestoringDarkness.com, press the donate link, and you can help us out. Or you can go to SoftLights.org and help out Mark Baker, who has a petition before the FDA right now. That's right. 60,000 signatures to get them to do something about these crazy glaring headlights. That's right. That are blinding people on the road. And so great work by Mark Baker of Soft Lights Foundation, softlights.org. And you can check us out at restoringdarkness.com. Odette Wilkins, it's a pleasure to meet you and welcome you to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
On our last show, we had a researcher and he came on the show and I don't even know if it's out yet, Scott, but he basically told us that the volume of electric lights in cities is neither... there's no indication that it reduces crime or increases crime. Lack of light does not increase crime and more light does not decrease crime. And these things are not correlated. And he had many thousands and thousands of instances, Mark, where this was recorded over years. And my question for you, Odette, so if it doesn't create more safety and it doesn't reduce accidents, it doesn't reduce pedestrian vehicle accidents, does it cause harm? Does LED light and does the radiation or the luminance, as Mark often calls it, from LED lighting cause harm to people?
Well, I'm not that familiar with the luminescence aspect of LED lighting, but I have heard that the lighting has been associated with 5G. In one of the countries in the UK, they seem to be putting 5G into the LED lighting. I'm not sure exactly how that is, how that actually plays out, but that's going to cause a lot of radiation. If you're going to be placing 5G in the lighting fixtures, that is going to cause a lot of radiation, and 5G goes into the millimeter wave spectrum. So that we can expect to increase radiation, definitely.
So what you're probably talking about there is Li-Fi. So that is wireless internet over light, and it's called Li-Fi. And so light moves at the speed of light. So nothing would be faster than an internet connection that is over light. And also, that is actually the matrix. So when, you know, you see in the matrix, you see that picture of the zeros and ones coming down. That's what they're doing, is they're gonna implant that internet signal into all of the beams of light from an electric light fixture. That's already happening.
Right. And so I'm not really familiar with that, but I do know that wired connections are much faster than wireless connections. Now, I don't know, you know, in terms of how 5G is going to work at the speed of light. I have not heard that, but wired connections are far more superior, and the wireless infrastructure cannot compete with wired infrastructure. So if you have coaxial cable, or if you have especially fiber, you know, wireless is not going to work anywhere near as fast as fiber. And that is now going into the quantum speeds. We know that in Chattanooga, Tennessee, they're now looking at quantum speeds because they are a totally fiber connected network. So they are going to go at speeds that 5G can't compete with.
Do you want the bad news?
Yeah.
The bad news is fiber optics is using light. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
So the fiber optics is light. And what they're doing is they're taking that signal and they're going to put it into general illumination so that all, like, eventually, I mean, I do lots of podcasts. One of them is the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. And we've talked to a lot of people that are at the forefront of Li-Fi technology. And, you know, Li-Fi has a lot of superiority over Wi-Fi in terms of that it doesn't leave the space that it's illuminated in. But yeah, if you're putting 5G signals into it, it's going to be certainly an interesting angle. Mark Baker's dying to come in. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I'm afraid. So Odette, I've met Odette before, and her expertise is in radio frequency radiation and not the visible light spectrum. And so if we're hitting her with the questions about light, that's probably not her area. In my understanding, the Li-Fi is actually transmitting information over light. But when we're talking about 5G, we mean fifth generation radio frequency radiation. So it's actually a different thing. So they're using the poles to transmit information over the radio frequencies using a fifth generation, which is, I'm not sure, faster or smaller cells, et cetera. So that's where Odette's expertise is. And so if I could just sort of back up a little bit, Odette, maybe you could tell our viewers sort of where your expertise. I understand you founded nonprofits, you founded advocacy organizations, and you're an attorney. Is that right?
Yes. So and you're right. Our area is more in radio frequency radiation and in the invisible spectrum, where people cannot see it, they cannot smell it, they can't feel it until they're injured. So that is the area that we are working in. It's in the area that people cannot see. And that's part of the problem that we're having, that because you can't see it, you think it's not going to harm you. That's not the case. It's like gas on the stove, except that gas has a smell to it. They artificially put a smell in it so that you know that there's impending danger. There is no such warning in radio frequency radiation or millimeter waves. And you're injured before you know it. And then some people have been permanently injured. So that's the area that I deal with. And we're trying to make the invisible visible, so to speak.
How did you get into this particular area of all the things once you graduated from school, et cetera? How did you get into radio frequency?
Well, actually, after I graduated from law school, I went straight into computer law. At that time, it was in 2000. And so I was working on internet law and computer law, and the technology bubble was just starting to come on the horizon. So I was very much involved in wireless issues and wired issues with my clients. And then I started to do a deep dive when I heard about 5G and realized that we may have a problem here, because I went into technology. I used to work at HBO, and you know, HBO was at the cusp of pay television, and now I'm going to be at the cusp of technology. That was the really, you know, sexy thing in law, right? To get into a cutting edge technology. So I thought, wow, this is going to help people. On top of that, this is a win-win situation. And then I did the deep dive into 5G and into radio frequency radiation and the harms. And then I realized that we have been introducing a technology that is untested. And the technology that had been tested previous to 4G and 5G, like 2G and 3G, were already found to be harmful to and causing biological effects. So then I drew the line. As an attorney, I drew the line and said, you know, this is something that is potentially dangerous for the public. And while I love technology and I think technology is great when it helps people, when it starts to harm people, that's where I draw the line as an attorney and as a human being. And that's when I started to see that, whoa, we've got a catastrophe looming here and we need to do something about it. The very first thing that needs to be done is to educate the public. And that is why we formed Wired Broadband. And then we also formed the National Coalition, the National Call for Safe Technology, because we found that there were a lot of people who were very concerned and who were being harmed and who were being disabled, either temporarily or permanently, from radio frequency radiation. So we decided that we needed to have a place to land and we needed to communicate with each other. That's when we started that. And then with respect to New York City, when they started putting up the 5G towers right outside people's apartment buildings and on the sidewalks, that's when people started to scream. And then we formed a coalition, the New York City Alliance for Safe Technology. And now there are 16 community boards in New York City that have opposed the 5G towers. And that's about 25% of New Yorkers. And there are more that are going to be coming on board. So people are awakening to this, but the most important thing is to make people aware. And that is why we form these organizations.
Wow. And how you said that people started screaming, but that's if they can't see it, how do they, or is it just the visibility of the tower? Are they feeling this radiation?
Yeah, it's the visibility of the tower. You see, once they actually start to see an object in front of them that's really that really portends something that is not going to be helpful for them and that's ugly on top of everything, and they want to put this in historic districts and in front of historic landmarks, then people start to scream. So initially they start to scream about the aesthetics, but then they start to ask more questions. And the more questions they've been asking, the more that they realize that this is harmful. And people in New York City, we've been hearing complaints of people getting headaches and not feeling well and wanting to change venues or escaping New York. I know at least a couple of people or several people who have had to leave their apartments in New York City because they were injured.
They were injured by, they know that they were injured by 5G. What were the injuries and how do they know that it was connected to that?
Well, not necessarily 5G, but it was connected to radio frequency radiation. And it was either the smart meters or the Wi-Fi, because all of this puts out radiation, radio frequency radiation. And they were injured. One was injured because there were smart meters on the other side of her bedroom wall. And that caused permanent neurological damage. There was someone else where there was a whole bunch of Wi-Fi that all of a sudden it started to promulgate in her area in New York City, and she could not survive. So she had to escape New York City. And there have been others as well. There's a student at one of the schools here who was in a dorm, and she was very badly injured, and she had to escape as well. So it's starting to happen, and more people are becoming injured generally from radio frequency radiation. Now, 5G has been untested. There's been no pre-market testing for 5G, but the case studies that have already come out on 5G, particularly out of Sweden, there have been about 7 at this point since the beginning of last year, showed that people were harmed, seriously harmed, These included business people where the 5G tower was placed outside of their businesses. This included an elderly couple where 5G towers were placed on top of their apartment buildings. Wherever they've been placed, people were injured. And that is what the case studies show. And there's been no post-market market monitoring of 5G. The problem with 5G is that there has really been no large testing because, for instance, Senator Blumenthal of Connecticut, U.S. Senator Blumenthal of Connecticut, asked the industry executives back in 2019 in a hearing if there have been any safety studies done on 5G. And they said, none that we know of. So that's when he said, then we're flying blind here as far as health and safety is concerned. And that's exactly what's happening here. We're flying blind here. But the people were initially upset and screaming when they saw the 5G towers.
Odette, that's why it's interesting for me to have you on this show, because in my area, it's the same with LED radiation. So the authorities talk about LED lights, but I want to kind of rumble that it's radiation in the visible part of the spectrum. There's pre-market testing. There's no monitoring of it now. And so we have the same issue with, in the U.S., the Food and Drug Administration and the Center for Devices and Radiological Health is supposed to be doing all of that and reporting to Congress and monitoring that, and the FDA is not doing that. One of the things what's the term? We have light pollution, we have air pollution, we have water pollution. What's the term we use for electromagnetic radiation pollution? That's too many words, I think. Is there a term that you all use?
Can I addendum that question? And Mark, just while she's answering, just turn off anything else that's on your computer. You're cutting out just a little touch. Where is this pollution? It's not in the air. It's not in the water. It's not in the earth. It's something else. There's some other field. And so that's kind of the same question that Mark is asking you.
Yeah, so it's electrosmog and it is in the air. The thing is that you can't see it. It travels, the sound waves travel through the air. That's what they're called, airwaves. You know, radio frequency, radiation travels through the air. They're airwaves. The problem is that they're pulsating. It's not a simple sine wave where it's nice and smooth. These are jagged, pulsing radiation impulses. So if you think of turning on your light 1,000 times a second, you might come close to how your body reacts to it. It's like turning on the light 1,000 times a second, and that would drive you crazy if you were to see it. Well, this is being perceived on the biological level because it does produce biological effects, and that has been already determined. It's been determined for some time now, especially with the 2G and 3G testing. The International Agency of Research on Cancer, which is an arm of the WHO, the World Health Organization, I believe it was in 2011, it came out with a class 2B classification of carcinogeneity. In other words, 2G and 3G radiation is a possible carcinogenic. And now, at least one of the scientists who was in that working group is now calling it a human carcinogen. And so we have a problem here because it is carried over the air and people can't see it, and therefore they think that they're out of harm's way. And then they come down with illnesses, cardiac incidents, tachycardia, heart arrhythmias, and other things. And they don't even realize that that is exactly what is the result and the symptoms of electromagnetic radiation. And there's a spectrum of symptoms. It's neurological symptoms. You get brain fog, you become tired, fatigued, you don't know what it is. You go to the doctor, they don't know what it is either, and they misprescribe things because, you know, they just don't know what it is because they just don't know that that's the cause. And they think that it's coming internally, but it's actually coming externally. So people who otherwise don't have any underlying conditions, if they do, it's all under control. It goes out of whack when you start going in within the field of electromagnetic radiation, which is why I carry with me all the time an electromagnetic detector, and that is a Safe and Sound Pro 2, which measures the units of intensity and volume of these electromagnetic waves.
Oh, that's really interesting. Is that do radio frequency only, or could we use that same thing for light, visible light
no,
radiation?
No, it's just for radio frequency radiation, but there's also a tri-field which measures electric and magnetic fields separately. But the Safe and Sound Pro is specifically for radio frequency radiation. And it's very good because sometimes I don't feel very good when I'm in an area with high radiation, and immediately I get a headache, and then my heart starts to chime in, and then I know that I'm somehow in harm's way, and I take out my meter, and lo and behold, it's way off the charts, and it's registering in the red zone, and then I know I have to get out of there. Unfortunately, I didn't get out soon enough back in the summertime, and I was in Penn Station, and it was a tremendous amount of radiation. And before I could get out, I got super tachycardia, and I had to rush to the emergency room.
Wow.
So I'm a technology attorney. It shouldn't affect me, right? I should be immune, but it affected me. And so I cannot be near radio frequency radiation that is too intense because it has biological effects. And it has biological effects on other people too.
So when the lighting industry first began adopting LEDs, there was a technical issue that occurred. And this technical issue was that the electricity supplied is AC and LED diodes use DC. And so what initially transpired was just what you had said, not 1,000, but 60 times a second, the light would go from 0 to 100. Off and on and off and on. And light flicker is proven to be a problem. Like, there's no question. We have studies on lighting flicker, and the old lighting flicker from fluorescence would go from 100 to 60. 100 to 60, not 100 to 0. Right? So only LEDs can go off and on that fast, whereas fluorescent tubes would just lose their light and come back up and lose their light and come back up. And this was enough to cause proven headaches and all sorts of different, it's proven. Like, it's not, there's no question about it. It was proven in a double-blind survey by Professor Arnold Wilkinson in the UK. Episode 7 of Get a Grip on Lighting or something like that. Anyway, we know that flicker causes people health problems. There is absolutely no question about it. And certain people are more susceptible than other people. So we know that people driving in a vehicle at night through these outdoor lights that are flickering on and off, they'll cause them to have motion sickness. It'll cause them to have a seizure. Epileptics are particularly sensitive to this, and so on and so forth. What is it? You said you had a heart issue when you were exposed to this. What are the specific consequences to the population of exposure to radiation? And what are the acute injuries, and what are the chronic or lower level ones that we wouldn't notice?
Well, there's been a Bevington study where they identified about 30% of the population has mild symptoms, and then about 5% or so have medium symptoms, and about just less than 1% have severe symptoms where it is life-threatening and they're disabled and they cannot work or do anything near radiation, and they have to get out as quickly as possible. So it's a constellation of symptoms, and it goes anywhere from brain fog, lack of concentration, anxiety, depression, as well as headaches, arrhythmia, AFib, neurological neurological disorders, a dizziness, balance disorders, heart arrhythmias. I think I said that. It really runs the gamut. And
this has been proven in studies that these symptoms occur in 2 and 3G. So we know that 5G being more intense, it's only going to make it worse. That's what, like, we know this for certain.
Right. So, yeah. So these are from scientific studies. And as a matter of fact, there were 11,000 pages of scientific studies showing harm below the FCC limits in a case that was decided in 2021. It was decided by the DC Circuit Court of Appeals, and they ruled against the FCC when the FCC decided not to update their emission standards. Now, their emission standards go back to 1996. You know that in the technological age, 6 months is already a dinosaur, right? It's already outdated. Since 1996 until 2024, almost 30 years, they have not updated their limits, despite the fact that in the docket, they opened up a docket to get people to bring in information to see if their standards need to be updated. They did. They had it open for several years, and then they closed it. And they said, there's nothing to see here. And the court said, well, did you form a committee to review all of these studies? No. Did you review this in any way? They said, no. They just took the FDA's assurance and letter that there was nothing to see here. And the court said, no, that violated the Administrative Procedures Act, which requires a federal agency to take a reasoned approach. That means they actually have to look at the documentation that was placed into the docket. They did not look at the documentation that was placed in the docket. So the court said that they failed to do that, and they failed to look at the long-term exposure. They failed to look at the exposure specifically to children. Up to this time, in 2024, since 2021, the FCC has failed to comply. So in terms of 5G, yes, those symptoms did arise during the case studies, the 7 case studies that I mentioned from Sweden. Those were similar symptoms that they got with 5G. Now, 5G is a totally different technology from 4G or 3G or 2G, because 5G is a beam-forming technology. The other technologies are omnidirectional antennas. So it is a beam-forming technology. It locates your cell phone when you activate your 5G, and then it sends out a transmission. It sends out a beam so that it transmits directly with your cell phone. It is a beam-forming technology, and actually it's also used by the military, from what I understand, called active denial system, in which they use it for crowd control, and they send out a beam so that people feel like their skin is burning and they disperse a crowd. So that is what 5G is at the higher millimeter spectrum. And so this is what we're deploying in our population right now.
So Odette, this is new to me, that
what the heck
2G, 3G, 4G is omnidirectional, but 5G is directional.
Wow.
And it's exactly like LEDs. Mm-hmm. So a tungsten filament, the sun, a candle, they're all omnidirectional. We feel pretty comfortable with those. LEDs are directional, just like a laser. And we have people getting the same symptoms you're talking about from LEDs, the nausea, the vertigo. Yeah. It's the same, the brain fog, and it's doctors. They've verified it. We have medical notes, the epileptic seizures, the migraines, and it's also pulsed. The LED light is pulsed. You know, as Michael just said, it comes on and off 0 to 100 instantly. So we have the same two problems, just different parts of the spectrum, don't we? Wow, it's kind of shocking.
It is. And so what happened with this case in terms of their standards, we can't now look at them as safety standards anymore. But what they've become is a safe harbor for industry to shield them from any kind of claim of personal injury. As long as they are operating within the FCC limits, they are immune from, or they're shielded from any kind of personal injury lawsuits.
You know, it's fascinating to me. I had a conversation with someone on the weekend. I'm not going to say the name because it's not really germane to the conversation. But we were talking about democracy, and you hear democracy all the time on the news. Democracy, democracy. I don't even know what people are talking about when they talk like that. I don't like it's just like a catch buzz for phrase or something. But you know, this guy was saying to me, he's like, the United States is not a democracy. I'm like, what are you talking about? What about, you know, we the people, you know, for the people? He's like, that's all marketing. He goes, the United States is a plutocracy and always has been, going back to the days of slavery when the government protected slave owners. And the only thing the slave thing was about, the Civil War, was to remove the protection for the slave owners and give it to industrialists in the North. That became the Gilded Age of all these guys, these banksters and all that stuff back in the day. And it's, you know, he's like, that's the history of the United States is plutocracy. And what you're seeing is that all the laws are passed to protect the businesses, not to protect the people. And you're just basically laying out. And Mark, I think you're actually in a good position with that, because what Mark is fighting is the FDA hasn't looked at lighting radiation in 70 years or something like that, right? At least it's 96 for you. It's the 50s for Mark. Is the U.S. government set up? Is it true to simply set up to protect corporate interests? Like, it seems like that's all it is. Like the United States government gets together and they set up these systems that protect certain corporations, and then the Congress people all invest in these corporations and get rich. Everybody gets rich protecting is that really what's happening here? Like, is it seriously, or is it just total incompetence? Which one is it?
And Michael's coming at this from a position, he's a Canadian. So yeah, that maybe that helps give you context.
Well, I think it is, it's both. I think there's a level of incompetence here, and going beyond the jurisdiction, the federal agencies are going beyond the jurisdiction which they have been legislated to do. So for instance, the FCC has begun beyond its jurisdiction of regulating the industry and regulating the use of radio frequency radiation by putting out an order, I believe this was back in 2018, that allowed for the rapid deployment of 5G. And that is not their jurisdiction. That was not their jurisdiction to do, because the Telecommunications Act is the act that gives the FCC its jurisdiction, and the Communications Act of 1934. And that is simply to make a phone call, to allow people around the country to make a phone call. And so we've succeeded in doing that, but the companies are now taking away the landlines, mm-hmm. which is going to prevent people from being able to dial 911 when the whole cellular equipment in particular areas go down, which is mm-hmm. what we experienced back a few weeks ago in California, when there were about 70,000 people who went without any kind of communication service to be able to dial 911. Because the telecom industry is now retiring their landlines because it's not as profitable as their wireless. So the FCC put forth a ruling allowing for the rapid deployment of 5G. And what happened is that they have been getting away with it, except when they came to New York. When a telecom company wanted to put in a whole bunch of 4G antennas and towers, and the town didn't want them. And they asked, do you have a gap in service? You have to show evidence of a significant gap in phone service. That is what gives the industry the ability to come into your neighborhood in order to put in communications equipment. It's just the ability to make a phone call on your landline. And the company said, we don't have to show you a significant gap in service. You see this FCC rule? We just have to show you that there's a capacity need for future demand, and period. Well, the judge said, not so fast. Just because the FCC interpreted the Telecommunications Act to state that you can deploy 5G doesn't mean that the FCC got it right. We in New York do not observe that rule, and it is not applicable. And just because the FCC says it is, doesn't make it the rule. And it's what the Second Circuit states is the rule under the Telecommunications Act, and that is you have to find a significant gap in service, and you have to use the least intrusive means possible. But under the 5G ruling that the FCC came out, they don't have to show a gap in service, and they don't have to use the least intrusive means possible, and they can put them anywhere, basically anywhere they want. So we put a check on that in New York. That was put to the test in New York. Unfortunately, in other jurisdictions, they're just going in lockstep with the FCC, and they don't need to, because 5G is not covered under the Telecommunications Act. And what the FCC did is they gave a gift to the industry at the expense of consumers.
Odette, would you say that 5G is as significantly different compared to previous radio frequency cell tower stuff as LED is to traditional light sources? 5G is this dramatically different type of technology?
Well, yes. I mean, it's vastly different. As a matter of fact, all wireless is different. That was really meant to just be a supplement to the landlines. But now that they're replacing landlines with wireless, we are completely at the mercy of the telecommunications industry when their telecommunications equipment goes down. So, LEDs were thought of to, I guess, eventually replace incandescent lighting. Wireless was never thought, when it came on, it was never, I never anticipated, as even as a technology attorney, that would replace the landlines. So that's now proving to be a disaster, because if people cannot make a 911 call, that is the basis for why the Communications Act of 1934 was enacted, so people could make a call. And so that is, so in terms of its analogy to the LED lights, it's a little bit different, because it was supposed to be a supplement to landlines, not to replace them, and not to take away people's ability to dial 911. But I'm sure that there are other analogies that can be made with LED lighting.
The Michael's, he's the director of Lighting and Darkness Foundation, which is an industry-created organization. And they're trying to solve this light pollution problem. Is there any industry similar thing to the Lighting and Darkness Foundation for radio frequency? Is the industry trying to recognize that there's a problem? And is anybody in the industry trying to solve the problem?
Well, you know, you really hit on a very important point, and that is of innovation. How do you innovate? By competing on safety. So if you start to compete on safety, on what is best for the community, then you start to go into great areas of innovation, just as your foundation is doing. But the industry right now, the telecom industry, is not acknowledging that there is any harm. And I understand that people have been getting deplatformed when they start talking about 5G and the harms of 5G and the harms of electromagnetic radiation. Now, it's very important that in a free market economy, which we're supposed to have, that there be an innovative alternative, that there's enough competition so that they can compete on safety. There's nobody competing on safety right now in the telecommunications industry. They just want to saturate us with 5G.
So it's interesting that you talk about competing on safety. So I see a path out of the light pollution debate or the light pollution problem for the lighting industry, because actually mitigating light pollution involves more light fixtures, not less light fixtures. involves better technology for dimming and lighting controls and all this sort of stuff. It doesn't involve less. It involves more light fixtures, more equipment, and so on and so forth. So the actual, there's an opportunity there. I think telecom and 5G, if what you say is correct, and I have no reason not to believe you. I'm sure you're being authentic and honest. And but the, you know, what you're saying is correct. This is like social media. No amount is healthy. You know, I tell my kids all the time, they're on social media. I do this to them. I do the smoking signal because social media is exactly like smoking. It's bad for you. There's no safe amount. And the companies are lying to everybody like it's the 1960s that social media is safe and it's all the parents' fault. You know, it's addicting. There's no safe amount. I think you're in the same boat there with whatever 5G is. You think like advancements would mean better and safer and cleaner for everybody. But 5G actually means... if you know you're holding your phone to your head, they got a laser beam of radiation going into your ear now on top of the radiation from your phone, and this is all worse, but the only winners are people that make the money off it, like the tobacco companies. And you know what, if I went into Rothmans, I used to have a Rothmans building at York Mills and Leslie until they made it illegal to smoke inside in buildings in Toronto, and you would go there and everyone at Rothmans was a smoker. There was no non-smokers at Rothmans. Everybody smoked there. You'd walk in the office and you'd walk into a big smoky room. This is 2006. I remember selling them light bulbs back then. And so I like the definitely the telecoms agencies are exactly like the lighting industry was about 2 or 3 years ago, with their head completely in the sand, just like the smokers down at Rothmans sitting there at their desk smoking cigarettes and leaving the city of Toronto because city of Toronto passed a law saying you can't smoke inside anymore. And so they left. But I mean, you're in that's the problem, is that there's this element of head in the sand attitude in these industries where everyone's getting rich off this kind of stuff, and they think it's okay. So how do you fix that problem?
Well, you know, it's not really a head in the sand. They actually know the deleterious effects. So for instance, one of the major carriers commissioned a report back in 2000. That was done by German scientists, and they found high risk of cancer, leukemia, and neurological disorders. And they already acknowledged the fact that people were getting sick and were getting disabled from electromagnetic radiation.
And this is not, this is pre-5G though.
This is pre-5G already. And this was in 2000, and there was a whistleblower who leaked it out. And so we have the report. And we've also reported it to the FCC in one of our filings. There's also a patent that we found by Swisscom. You know, Swisscom is a big Swiss telecommunications company. Mm. And in their patent, they were trying to reduce the level of wireless radiation. And the reason that they gave was because of high risk of cancer, and that the effects were, there's a constellation of effects, of biological effects that are not due to thermal heating, that they are due to non-thermal heating. If you've heard the distinction that the industry and the FCC are trying to make between non-ionizing and ionizing radiation, they're saying that only with ionizing radiation, the kind of radiation that you go for your x-rays that heats your tissue, can cause damage, can cause biological effects. They haven't even looked at the non-thermal effects, saying, well, if it's non-thermal, if it doesn't heat your tissue, then it doesn't have any effect. And this patent debunks that assertion. It states specifically that the biological effects are produced exactly in non-ionizing, non-thermal pathways. So if you see the industry coming out with this kind of data, then you know that they know it. They know about it. And I don't think that patent attorneys are particularly activists. So if there's a patent attorney or any other patent specialist who put this patent together, I'm sure they did it dispassionately. Mm-hmm. So if you can see the industry documents like this, it is clear that it produces biological effects. And as a matter of fact, the reason why their 5G is used in active denial is because it produces biological effects, because it makes you feel like your skin is burning. And even at higher radiation levels. So this is something that the industry already knows. And they have no incentive right now, either from the FCC or otherwise, in order to compete on safety. And what we need to do is we need to get the industry to compete on safety. As soon as that's done, we're going to have a much different landscape. But until that's done, that's not going to happen. And so that's and also I just want to say that the New Hampshire Commission also came out with a report stating that there are harmful effects, biological effects from radio frequency radiation. And that was a commission formed in New Hampshire to study the effects of 5G. So we do have a lot of information indicating that this is dangerous, and the information about it is not being distributed. And that's why it's so important for our organizations, such as the National Call for Safe Technology and New York City Alliance for Safe Technology and otherwise, to really bring this out to the public. And so I'm very happy that we're talking about this, because I'm hoping that your viewers will see that this is these are dangerous instrumentalities, as we call them in the law.
Dangerous instrumentalities.
Dangerous instrumentalities. It's a dangerous instrumentality.
So I just want to clear up one assumption. Again, I probably already asked you this, but regardless as to how the technology works, 5G is way more intense than 4G and 3G and 2G. It's just way more at an intensity level that's much higher.
Well, yes, it is. And if you see it on the spectrum, it gets closer to the gamma rays, which is your X-rays. It gets closer and closer to that. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yes, it's far more powerful. It's far more powerful. And so that makes it not good, particularly because they have to put them very close to where people are, because the wavelengths only go about 500 feet.
So that's why they're talking about the light fixtures. That's why they're talking about light fixtures. And so I thought you were talking about Li-Fi at the beginning of the show, but really what you're talking about is the mounting of smaller 5G telecom, what is it, projectors? What do you call these things? These antenna? Is that what they are?
They're nodes, 5G nodes.
And so these are going to be much closer to where humans are walking and pervasive everywhere, so you can't get away from them.
Exactly, because they're saying, oh, we're going to deliver this great, you know, high bandwidth. It's like if you think of like from a one or two lane highway with 2G and 3G, maybe 4G has a 4-lane highway. With 5G, you can have a 10-lane highway, and you can put massive amounts of data. But the data doesn't carry as far. So you have to put a lot more 5G nodes around people, more 5G towers around people. And so then people are going to be in this wireless mesh, this wireless electrosmog soup, in order for them to download a movie, in order to make a phone call. You don't need that. 4G operates miles and miles away. 4G can operate at least 4 miles away. So you can have a tower that's at least 9 miles away. I meant 9 miles. It can operate 9 miles away. And you can still get your reception. You can still get your phone call. You can still download your movies. Why on earth do you need something that's every 500 feet? You have another 5G node in order for people to be able to make a phone call. And certainly with the landlines going down, people are not going to be able to dial 911. So we're talking about the digital divide, right? So the industry has us talking about the digital divide. Well, what about the communication divide? If you're taking away the landlines and everybody's going to be dependent on the wireless system, and your wireless system goes down and no one's able to make a 911 call, you don't have a digital divide. You have a communications chasm that people cannot make a call at all. And that is not what the Communications Act of 1934 or the Telecommunications Act of 1996 you know, contemplated. They contemplated everybody being able to make a call. So now we have a, you know, a very big problem, because people's attention has been diverted from basic landline access to 911, to bridging the digital divide. Well, how is that going to help people? How is that going to produce equity for underserved people if you are going to be taking away their ability to dial 911? So we need our landlines and we need the wireless. You know, we're not going to get away, we're not going to get rid of our cell phones, but we need to deploy it safely. There's a safe way of doing it and a dangerous way of doing it. And right now we're doing it in a dangerous way, because these nodes are getting very, very close to people, and people are not going to have anywhere to go. There are people who have had to move from their dream house. They invested in their dream house and then they had to move because they can't live there anymore, because now it's a toxic zone. And that's exactly what happened in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, when a 4G cell tower was placed down the street from a whole bunch of houses, and a whole bunch of people got sick. Children were vomiting in their beds, pets were vomiting, people were getting sick. So they had to evacuate. And the people who could afford to evacuate, evacuated. And there were about 17 people who got sick. So this is a real problem. You can have them far away from people, far, far away, and you can get the benefits. And that's exactly why the industry has to compete on safety. They're not competing on safety right now. They're being given immunity by the Telecommunications Act, and they're being given immunity by the FCC. So they are being shielded from any kind of claims of personal injury. And the Telecommunications Act states that as long as the telecom carriers are within their wireless limits as set by the FCC, no one can bring a suit about having been harmed. But the FCC has not complied with the court order in order to revise their limits to take into consideration the 11,000 pages of scientific studies, peer-reviewed, that show harm below their limits.
The U.S. is entering its Byzantium phase. There's too many laws and regulations. There's so many places and exceptions and all this kind of stuff, different turf wars. There's just nobody can seem to get through, and it's in the lighting industry, it's in the telecommunications industry, this sort of quagmire of blocks and rules and regulations, and I would call them kind of phony regulations, Odette, where the regulation is, they're regulating that the industry not get sued. That's the purpose of the regulation, is that and then the person that wrote the regulation goes and works at the company that they wrote the regulation for. This happens like crazy in the United States particularly, but also in Canada a little bit too.
Right, right. And I just want to say that, see, there's a little bit of a conundrum here. Mm-hmm. The FCC has promulgated rules that are favorable to the industry, right? Now, those regulations are bad, but what they want to do is they want to streamline the deployment of 5G by eliminating what they call regulatory barriers. Mm. So I want to distinguish what you're talking about. The regulatory barriers that they're talking about, and they never identify what those barriers are, but you know what they are? It's preventing people from having their a say in whether or not they need it or that they want it. So notice and the right to be heard are somewhat being taken away, and especially the right to be heard and the right to consent. That is what they want to take away. They want to take away any amount of time that localities need in order to review these permits in order to make a determination. And what they want to do is they want to eliminate people's voices. Those are the regulatory barriers that they're talking about. Because right now we have a whole slew, an avalanche of federal telecom bills that are going through Congress. And one of which is the worst of the worst, which is HR 3557. And they state that if any locality puts out a moratorium on 5G or anything like that, then that is prohibited. There's an express prohibition against a community saying that they need more time and that they don't want it there it is prohibited expressly in the bill. And they also state that they must, localities, if they deny a tower, they must publish that denial the same day that the denial is rendered. Now, how are you going to do that when people meet in the evenings and they're not done until 10 o'clock at night and they make a decision at 10 o'clock at night? How are you going to publish it on your website that you've denied this tower? And in addition, the Telecommunications Act requires that a locality provide substantial evidence in the record in order to
But hang on a second here. If they don't provide that notice, it waives their ability to deny it? Like if they don't get it posted on the same day, because it's 11:35 when they did the final vote and the gavel fell, and then the next day the website administrator comes and posts it. You didn't put it on the same day, so we're building the tower anyway. It can't be like that, can it?
Correct. Correct.
I got a name for all this stuff. I got a name for all this stuff. So we used to be citizens. Like I used to be a citizen of Canada. Okay, I used to be sometime 30 years ago or something. Now I'm a peasant. They just want me to be a peasant. You shut up and get in line, boy, you Canadian boy. You make sure that cell tower goes up. And when we tax you and take away all your money and tell you what to do and everything else, you be a good Canadian and say thank you and apologize for being in the way. Sorry about that. You know, this is what they're forcing us into, it seems like. It's crazy. This argument you're giving is everywhere. It's in the lighting industry. It's everywhere. It's like, I'm a citizen of Canada. Nah, we're more about being peasants. You're more of a peasant, really, than a citizen. I call it peasantization, where they remove the franchise, the agency of all the citizens with these bizarre laws and tricksterism, Byzantium-style tricksterism that they have in the government now. It's like, I know how we can get this through. We do it like this, and we declare the Emergencies Act, and then it's not really an emergency, but everyone's going to... And then instead of arresting people and trying them in front of a court, we're going to have a parliamentary committee. We're going to have a parliamentary... What the hell is a parliamentary committee? Arrest the bastard and put him on trial for crimes. You understand what I mean? Like, I'm sick of this congressional hearing. So what the hell is a congressional hearing? Can you put the guy in jail at the end of it? No. Sorry, my producer's telling me to calm down. But anyway, it just drives me crazy, this stuff. It's everywhere. Because, like, you just see everywhere you see is like this trickster, Byzantium style tricksterism that's entering, and it's all about dividing things up and creating like little silos where you can make a ton of money and, you know, everybody else can get poisoned. Everyone else gets poisoned or whatever. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And what's happening with the avalanche of federal bills now in the United States is that there are over 90 bills that the industry has introduced into Congress. And there was one that just, and what they do is they take like little pieces and they try to attach it to a must-pass bill, a bill that's going to pass, and they can put it under the radar. It'll go sub rosa. No one's going to really, it's a bill that everybody wants to pass. So they're not going to stop it because of one or two sentences that are really horrible. So for instance, there was a bill that just got passed by voice vote in the House. It was H.R. 6492. That bill it's an omnibus bill for the federal lands. So who wouldn't want to be for it? Everybody wants to help the federal lands. They want to sustain them. They want to maintain them as places for the public to go to. And children, and it was mentioned in one of the hearings, children with disabilities, it's very important with mental disabilities to go to the parks and to be able to be in nature and all of that. So that's wonderful. So everybody wants it. The problem is that the industry put in three provisions, and one of which was put in at the last minute. And that is that they're going to carpet our national parks with wireless, with 5G towers. So it gives them the right to do that, which means that it's obviously going to be a fire risk because these are electrical installations. People don't realize that these are electrical installations, and 5G runs very hot because it does a lot of analog to digital conversions. So there's already been a tremendous number of fires in California, one of which was the worst, Woolsey fire in 2018. It caused $6 billion of damages, and it was caused by one lashing wire. I think there was also another piece of telecom equipment that did not function well, but there was one lashing wire and it had to be repaired. And there was a notice 6 months earlier about the need to repair the slashing wire. It never got repaired, and it ignited an inferno.
Mm, that's the Paradise City fire, right? That burned that whole town down?
That was Woolsey. Woolsey, which is the worst fire in California history. And that caused $6 billion worth of damages. 100,000 acres of land were destroyed. 295,000 people had to be evacuated. And there were three deaths.
So, listen, the old bait and switch. I mean, this is as old as the time. And I don't mean to be critical of the United States, but where you guys are Americans and you guys know nothing about Canada, but we know a lot about you. So we can talk about the United States, right? It seems like your Congress is a complete waste of time. Like, you see them talking, they're not even talking about what the issues are. They're talking about all sorts of other things. And you like, oh, 61, I'm going to just bring it up. I know I'm not supposed to bring up politics. Producer, and he's saying I'm going too long. I don't care. I do this for free, so nobody's paying me. So you have $61 billion, but apparently 2/3 or 3/4 of that is going to stay in the United States, and it's going to go to companies to bring iron ore out of the earth, put chemicals inside the metal, send it over to Ukraine so it can be exploded onto other people. That's the purpose of that bill, to get American industry to take precious metals from the earth, form them into weapons, shells, and ship them to the Ukraine so they can shoot them at the Russians and blow them up. Like, what the hell is this? This is insanity, moral insanity to me. Like, it's completely cuckoo for call. Like, where are the environmentalists? Where are the people, all these people talk? Where are these people? They're gone. They're nowhere to be found. And it just seems like we live in this Byzantium age where everybody's lying to everybody all the time. Nobody's telling the truth at all.
Yeah, well, the thing is that, really, to be fair, the information is not going out because the telecom industry now sits on boards of the news media, including the New York Times. So you're not going to see this information going out. So it's our responsibility to get the information out. And that is what we're doing. And so I just wanted to complete my thought about HR 6492.
Sure.
So what they're doing, they did at the last minute, a couple of days before the final vote, they put in another poison pill that industry consultants can be deputized to approve and to oversee cell towers in the national parks, which means that it's really the fox guarding the hen house, mm-hmm. giving the keys to the kingdom mm-hmm. of the kingdom. To the telecom industry, and that was a very bad provision that was added just 2 days before the vote. So now it's at the Senate, and we're trying to figure out what to do there. And we're trying to see what we can do about excising that language. So this is a problem, because what the industry is doing is they're taking little bits and pieces of what they want to do, and they're putting it into these must-pass bills. And people don't realize the magnitude of what they're doing. Because once these towers go into these national parks, those children with mental disabilities are going to get worse. Mm. Because it has been shown that wireless radiation causes ADHD and neurological disorders in children. So if children with neurological disorders are going to the forest in order to get some kind of relief, and they've got 5G towers there, that's not going to happen. It's probably going to make it worse for them. So everybody's been sold the bill of goods. And in terms of the bait and switch, there's been a big bait and switch in the United States. Because, and I can tell you, in New York, we were promised fiber to the premises, to all premises. And we were charged back in the 1990s, people who were using their landline phones, we were charged a particular sum of money on each of our bills in order to give to the industry to fund this fiber deployment to the home, wired deployment to the home. That did not happen. And what happened is, through the regulators, they've reported that this money has been siphoned off into their wireless enterprises. So that was the big bait and switch. We've already paid for wired. And instead, they're using the monies that they promised, that they got under the promise that they were going to do a wired connection. And now they're putting it to their wireless enterprises. So that is what the e-regulators have been reporting, and that is something that has to be examined as well. So that's the big bait and switch.
Odette Wilkins is telling us to follow the money, Mark Baker. But before we get into these rabbit holes, I mean, there's not even rabbit holes. It's just, it's open. Like, it's just open season. Like, you, it's not even you have to go down rabbit holes. It's just nobody reads the bill that goes through. I remember there was that one, I can't remember which congressman it was, and he's like, well, they were asking him why he was opposing the bill. And he said, because I think I'm the only one who read it. And as that's in Congress, right? Because it's 2,500 pages or something, right? It's like a big phone book of paper. Odette, I want to thank you for being a guest on the Restoring Darkness podcast. We kind of went on a different tangent, Mark, but it was fun. And so if you want to find Odette's work, her Facebook page is posted on the Restoring Darkness website along with two other websites, and you can look more into her there. And I want to thank you for joining us today. We're supposed to stick at 40 minutes. We went 25 minutes over on this one, but it was off topic, and we need to get more information. So I want to invite you to go to the restoringdarkness.com website and check it out. Click the donate link if you want to support the Lighting and Darkness Foundation. And also softlights.org. Mark Baker's on fire right now. It's got to be 70,000 now on that petition just over the course of the last hour we recorded, Mark. No, I don't know what it is, but that's a lot of signatures. 60,000 is a lot for his FDA work that he's doing. And you go to softlights.org to find out more about that. Like, subscribe, all that sort of stuff. But before you do, I just want to say thank you for watching and listening. Bye for now.